Welcome back, everyone, to Market Wrap. I'm Mo Ansari, and you're tuned in as you've been doing so for over 35 years now. And as always, wherever you are across the nation, you can always pick up the phone, give me a call, or send me an email, and I will be more than happy to share my experience with you. But for the next few minutes, hold the calls. We are going to go to our guest line. On our guest line, someone you heard, about a decade ago. Last time we had a problem with the economy, we talked to Christopher Whalen. He is chairman of Whalen Global Advisors. Mr. Whalen is an investment banker and writer focusing on the banking, mortgage, finance, and fintech sector. He is the author of several books, contributing editor at National Mortgage News, and the editor of Institutional Risk Analyst. Mr. Whalen appears in a variety of other publications, media, including CNBC TV, Bloomberg TV. He's a member of the Economic Advisory Committee of FINRA, and is a senior advisor at JVB Financial Group in New York. Mr. Whalen, welcome back to Market Wrap.
Oh, welcome, Mo. Thank you for having me.
It's always nice to have you. Well, last time we talked to you was in 2009, during the fallout from the financial crisis and the Great Recession. Now everybody's running around here on fire. Oh my God, the banking crisis is here, and this is the beginning of another financial crisis. A lot of fear out there. Do you think this is comparable at all to what we saw last time, or is this an isolated incident?
Well, it's very different from last time. Last time we were worried about private mortgages. About half of the total U.S. mortgage market was private. They weren't government guaranteed. And then we had other problems with Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers and a number of other banks that had gotten overextended. Wachovia was another one. Eventually, Citi failed. This time around, however, we've gone through 12 years of what we call quantitative easing, which is a fancy way for the Fed to say they're printing money. And during that period, credit really did not rise to the top of mind of investors, regulators, everybody else. And so after COVID, particularly in 2020-21, the Fed printed a lot of money and they bought an enormous amount of securities. By the end of 2021, they owned $9 trillion worth of treasury bonds and mortgage bonds. And by doing that, unfortunately, they concentrated a lot of market risk on the books of banks. But when they then decided in end of 2021, beginning of 22, that they were going to tighten policy and they were going to stop buying securities in the open market, what that did was it forced a lot of banks that owned very little coupon treasury bonds, mortgage securities, into a position where they had big mark-to-market losses on these, you know, bonds that have AAA ratings and very low capital requirements from the regulators. They're supposed to be safe. But when the Fed moves interest rates 6 points in 18 months, no one is safe. And what essentially they did was they turned every bank in the country into long-term capital management. You remember them? The hedge funds?
Right. LTCM.
Yeah. So they all have a big mark-to-market problem, and they still do. There's two pieces of this problem. One was the banks needed cash. So the Fed responded, I think, very nicely over the last couple of weeks, opened the doors and said, here, we will take those Ginnie Mae 2% MBS that you own, which are trading in the 80s, by the way, 20 points below the original issue price, and we'll give you back your money at par. Okay, so they gave the banks money. But the longer term, and I mean a couple of quarters long-term problem, is that the banks still own these securities. And these are underwater. You know, this morning, SOFR is at 5%. Ginnie Mae 2 pays you 2% a year. So if you have to fund that bond, you're losing money every day. And over time, I think a lot of banks are going to be forced to sell this paper at a loss, and it's going to cause problems. So the Fed, by manipulating the market out of, you know, good intentions, has created a mess. And that's why we're having hearings up on Capitol Hill today and tomorrow.
So the banks are sitting with this paper, but they do have short-term paper available that they can sell, like T-bills, and raise cash if they are depositors, one certain amount of their money. What is wrong with having long-term mark to maturity paper on their books, because these are treasuries. These are the linchpin of the financial system that they're holding. Granted, they bottom at 100 and now they're 80 because Fed has raised rates, but at maturity, they'll get all their money back.
Well, correct. But if you see old fashioned banks, like my friends at New York Community Bank, they hold all their securities in what's called available for sale. And what that means is they're ready to sell them every day. And it means they mark them to market every day. If you bury a security like the one you just described in your held to maturity portfolio, you can ignore it for a while. But when your cost of funds is higher than the interest you're getting on the bond, eventually your treasurer is going to walk into the room and start screaming, because, you know, that's where the SNLs were in the 1980s. The last time we had a market that looked like this, with treasury bills at 4% and banks at about 1.5% on average cost of funds today, was during Paul Volcker in the 1980s, when he destroyed a lot of SNLs because they had an interest asset liability mismatch. So we have essentially created the same thing because we were trying to fight COVID, and they drove interest rates down, and we made a lot of loans, and we refinanced half of the corporate bond market at very low rates. But now the Fed has normalized interest rates, pushed Fed funds up towards 6%, and they buried all these banks. The banks can't adjust that fast, though. They just can't. It takes them at least a year to adjust to a 1% change in interest rates. So if you do 5 or 6, that's a lot.
How many banks do you think, Mr. Whalen, are underwater? Let's put it boldly and say, how many do you think are underwater right now?
To one degree or another, most of them. You know, you have the special cases like Charles Schwab, who has the lowest funding costs in the industry. Mm-hmm. They're okay. Bank America is another one. Bank America's got $500 billion worth of securities on their book, which they held to maturity. Now, eventually, they're going to be losing money on that book. And let me give you an example. 3/4 of all mortgage-backed securities were refinanced between 2020 and 2021. That means that they're all between a coupon of about 2% on the mortgage security and 4.5%. Okay? $9 trillion worth of securities. How much do you think you could raise interest rates before everybody who holds those securities is insolvent? About 3%. The Fed has raised rates 6%. So, you know, if you just do the bond math, you'll see that the Fed is also constrained. The same factors that are causing banks to have these big unrealized losses on their investments is also tied the Fed's hands, but they don't like to admit that their hands are tied. So, you know, let me finish that example. The average coupon on a mortgage-backed security today, $13 trillion worth of mortgages, is 3%. So, you know, raising mortgage rates up to 6% means everybody who owns that old paper is pretty far underwater, at least 20 points.
We're talking to Mr. Christopher Whalen. He's chairman of Whalen Global Advisors. Do you think the Fed made a mistake by raising rates so quickly, so much, and they fell behind in 2021 when they did not raise rates and then tried to play catch up and raise rates? And do you think they should stop now?
Well, the answer to all of those questions is yes, and let me walk you through it. If you go back to the financial crisis in 2008, when Ben Bernanke was chairman, and they started what we call quantitative easing, which is basically another way of saying that they couldn't drop interest rates anymore. So they went into the market and they started buying bonds to force investors to put their money in other things. Classic social engineering. Well, they should have stopped around 2010, 2011, because that's when the bond market started to function again. But they didn't. And people like Janet Yellen and Lyle Brainard and the left wing of the Federal Reserve Board, who've never been particularly worried about inflation and were always worried that we didn't have enough growth and enough employment, kept pushing for the Fed to do more. So they already had that embedded in their policy. They did QE2, QE3, QE4. Then we get to 2020, we have COVID. And everybody's, you know, terrified. We didn't know what was going to happen. And so they doubled up and they basically increased the size of the Fed's book by 100% in 18 months. I think all of this is a case of doing too much. And I do think the Fed should pause now for the simple reason that this inflation that we're dealing with is not just a function of monetary policy. It's a function of a lot of structural issues. And it's going to take time to fix. And the thing is, everybody's in such a hurry. You know, everybody in the market, all the equity managers, they want this to be fixed yesterday so they can go back in and buy stocks and have them go up 20% a year. But that may not happen. I think we're going to be facing a somewhat more boring and more pedestrian investment environment over the next few years.
There's been talk about more regulation being the answer to this crisis, but many are seeing that is the problem wasn't the lack of regulation, but a lack of enforcement of regulation. Yeah. What is your view on that?
Oh, I totally agree. I was an analyst at the Fed of New York. We don't need more regulations. You could see the problem with Silicon Valley Bank right in the data in the third quarter of last year. And what we have to do is figure out a way to get the regulators to do their job. The first job of a regulator when you're looking at a bank is that you have to understand what business are they in. Are they in the business of lending? Are they an asset gatherer like a Schwab or a First Republic that's in the investment business, really? Or are they something else? And Silicon Valley Bank was something else. I call it a hedge fund in drag because on the one hand, they would bank these early stage companies. They did a lot of leveraged lending to them, which is in theory at least more risky. But then on the treasury side of the bank, they had 35% of their assets in mortgage-backed securities, highly volatile securities. And then in the fourth quarter, they took that number up to 43% of total assets. I think they were betting on a pivot by the Fed. I think they were betting that they'd load up on these very long-duration securities, the Fed would drop rates, and they'd have a home run. You're not supposed to do that with a bank. And I'll tell you right now, I think the FDIC is going to prosecute the management of Silicon Valley Bank. Because whenever you have a loss to the receivership, a loss to the bank insurance fund, they usually sue the managers.
Do you see any investment opportunities right now that investors could take advantage of?
Well, I just wrote a note about New York Community Bank, which is a great old institution, but one that I know because they just acquired last December a bank called Flagstar. Flagstar is a wholesale bank from Detroit. They're the sixth largest loan servicer in the United States, and they're a very astutely managed business. So the old New York Community Bank was basically lending money on apartment buildings in New York City, very conservative culture, very efficient bank, bare bones. So now they have a wholesale business. And then the third leg to drop on this opportunity was, of course, the failure of Signature Bank. And in a transaction that closed about a week ago, New York Community Bank got $38 billion worth of deposits, four deposits at no premium. They bought assets. They bought branches on both coasts. And it's going to be a really transformational transaction for that bank. In simple terms, what that means, Mo, is that they're going to be able to pay off their high-cost funding, broker deposits, other sources of funding that they use to make more loans. And they're going to have a bank that's almost 100% funded with core deposits, which is great. When the mortgage industry comes back and interest rates fall, I think that stock is going to do very well. Just one caveat, obviously rates are high right now. Mortgage lending volumes are low. So if you're going to look at that stock, you're going to have to be patient.
So what is the name of the symbol on that community?
NYCB. But I own it. I always just, I talk about my portfolio. I don't make... stock picks because I'm a banker.
Okay. But Mr. Whalen, I want to thank you for taking the time again to be with us on Market Wrap. It's a pleasure to have you get your views. No, it's been a long time, 14 years since you were last on the broadcast. Hopefully we can do the next time a little quicker. Thanks again.
Well, while we're here, you got to talk to us.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Whalen, for being with us today.
Thank you.
I'm Mo Ansari. Stay tuned. I'm going to take a short break and I will be right back.